Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Vallava Giribhara Dhari Gopi Jana Vallava Giribhara Dhari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tiravana Chari Yamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari 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 Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paripraja Kacharya Stotra Satrasri Srimad Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paripraja Kacharya Stotra Satrasri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada Ki Jai. अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जाय नामाचार्य श्रील हरिदास ठाकुर की जाय प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद की जाय श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंड राधा कुंड गिरि गोवर्धन की जाय वृंदावन धाम की जाय नवद्वीप धाम की जाय यमुना माई की जाय गंगा माई की जाय तुलसी देवी की जाय भक्ति देवी की जाय समवेत भक्त वृंद की जाय इतै गौर प्रेमानंदी All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Ashto Parasata Sri Srimad, His Divine Loving Grace, Srila Giriraj Swami Maharaj Ki Jai, Srila Giriraj Holy Vyas Puja Ki Jai, Gaura Brahman.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11. Chapter 7. Lord Krishna instructs Uddhava. Text 51. Budyate sve na bedena vyakti sta Iva Tatkata Lakshyate Stula Matibi Atma Chavastito Arka Vat Budyate Svena Bedena Vyaktista Iva Tadgata Lakshyate Stula Matti Bir Atma Chavas Atma chavasti torkavat. Budyate svena bedena. Vyaktista iva tadgata. Lakshyate stula mati bir. Atma chavasti torkavat. Budyate svena bedena. Vyaktista iva tadgata. Lakshyate stula mati bir. Atma chavasti torkavat. Budyate is thought of. Sve in his original form. Na, not. Bedena, in terms of diversity. Vyakti, on separate reflecting objects. Staha, situated. Eva, apparently. Tadgata, actually having entered within them. Lakshyate, seems. Stulamatibhi, to those whose intelligence is dull. Atma, the self. Cha, also. Avastita, situated. Arkavat, like the sun. Translation. Even when reflected in various objects, the sun is never divided, nor does it merge into its reflection. Only those with dull brains would consider the sun in this way. Similarly, although the soul is reflected through different material bodies, the soul remains undivided and non-material. Please repeat. Even when reflected, in various objects, the sun is never divided, nor does it merge into its reflection. Only those with dull brains would consider the sun in this way. Similarly, although the soul is reflected through different material bodies, the soul remains undivided and non-material. Purport. The sun is reflected in many objects, such as windows, mirrors, shiny metal, oil, water, and so on. Yet the sun remains one and indivisible. Similarly, the eternal spirit soul within the body is reflected through the screen of the material body. Thus the soul appears to be young or old, fat or skinny, happy or sad. The soul may appear to be American, Russian, African, Hindu or Christian. However, the eternal soul in its natural position is free of any material designation. The word stula matibhi in this verse indicates those whose intelligence is gross and dull. We have practical experience of a dog urinating on a valuable painting at an outdoor art show. Due to its dull intelligence, the dog could not appreciate the actual value of the painting. Similarly, unless one takes to Krishna consciousness, one is grossly misusing the invaluable opportunity of human life. Human life is meant for self-realization, and we should not waste time bickering over material designations such as capitalist, communist, American, Russian, and so on. Instead, all people should take to the loving devotional service of God and realize their eternal pure identity. One should understand the sun by observing its direct manifestation and not its distorted reflection on material objects. Similarly, one should consider every living being in terms of its pure spiritual identity beyond the distorted manifestation of material designations. So there's more to the purport, but I'll stop and comment here because the first point is very important, which is that the soul, the sun is reflected in different objects, but the sun has its own identity, which is distinct from its different reflections. So in the same way, the soul has its spiritual identity, which is distinct from its manifestation in different bodies. And on account of false identification with the body, we quarrel and fight and waste so much time on the basis of the body. So the verse and purport are advising us not to see the soul reflected in different manifestations of different bodies, but to see the soul in its original pure spiritual existence. And that applies both to ourselves as souls and to others as souls. When we see someone, we shouldn't think, oh, this person is American, Russian, old, young, fat, thin, or whatever, but one should see that this is actually a soul, and that soul is part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, Krishna, and should engage in devotional service to Krishna. And in this consciousness, we are all one, in the sense that we are all spiritual, we're all eternal servants of Krishna, and we're all supposed to cooperate for Krishna's pleasure. And in that consciousness, all the quarrel and discord that arise from bodily identification disappear. Our relationships are harmonious and congenial and ultimately spiritual. So now we come to the next part of the purport. The word Atma in this verse also refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just as we tend to observe ordinary jiva souls through the reflection of the material body, we tend to observe the personality of Godhead through the distorting screen of our material mind. Thus, we imagine God to be impersonal, or material, or unknowable. When the sky is overcast, sunlight is the highest possible perception of the sun, which is covered by clouds. Similarly, when one's mind is fogged over with mental speculation, one may take the light emanating from the transcendental body of God to be the highest spiritual truth. However, when the mind is spotlessly clear, like a cloudless blue sky, one can see the actual form of the personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. The absolute truth cannot be perfectly understood by the covered mind of the conditioned soul. Rather, one must see the Lord through the clear blue sky of pure Krishna consciousness, which is free from fruitive desires and mental speculation. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, Jivera kalyana sadhana kam jagate asi e madura nam avidya timira tapana rupe virgagane viraje. The holy name of Lord Krishna descends into the darkness of the material world just to benedict the conditioned souls. The holy name of Lord Krishna is just like the sun that rises in the clear sky of the heart of the devotees. End quote. Such brilliant knowledge cannot be understood by those who are trying, in the name of either piety or atheism, to exploit the material creation of God. One must become a pure devotee of Lord Krishna, and then his knowledge will illuminate everything in all directions. Kasmin bhagavo vigyate sarvam evam vigyatam bhavati. Mundaka Upanishad 1:3. So, just as the soul can be reflected through different bodies, and we can miss the actual identity of the soul, in the same way, we can also misunderstand the Lord because of seeing him through the screen of our minds. And sometimes the mind is foggy, and when the sky is foggy or cloudy, we cannot see the sun. At most, we can see the sun shine to some extent, but we cannot actually see the form of the sun, which is hidden behind the clouds or fog. So in the same way, when our minds are foggy or clouded with material conceptions, we cannot appreciate the form of the Lord. At most, we might appreciate the effulgence of the Lord, which is emanating from his form. But when the mind is clarified and the fog and clouds are removed, then we can see the form of the Lord and understand our eternal relationship with the Lord as His eternal servant. And when we understand the Lord, then we understand everything, which is the meaning of the verse quoted from the Mundaka Upanishad 1.3 at the end of the purport. Kasmin Bhagavato Vigyanti Sarvam Evam Vigatam Bhavanti. As Srila Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness is like a switch. You turn on the switch to the light and immediately you can see everything. So when we turn on the light of Krishna consciousness, or when our consciousness is illuminated by Krishna, especially in the form of the holy name of Krishna, then we can realize the truth of Krishna and everything else in existence, including ourselves, the living entities, the various forms and expansions of the Lord, the various energies of the Lord, everything becomes revealed. And we see that actually Krishna is the origin of everything, and everything belongs to Him, and therefore everything, including ourselves and each other, should be engaged in His service. So these are very important principles. We may have heard the same points before, but as Srila Prabhupada says, repetition is important for understanding, because we are in the material atmosphere, which is full of fog and clouds, and therefore, even though something may be clear at a certain time, you know, in the right association, the same things become clouded over again, and we may lapse into certain habitual ways of thinking which are not spiritual or Krishna conscious. So we always have to pray that the truth of Krishna consciousness remains, you know, illuminated within our hearts, and that we don't slide into the fog and clouds of material consciousness. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions or comments? Yes, Kunti. The first point is that repetition is necessary. So I have no objection if you repeat it.
Okay. Now we have a... Is this the one that you spank?
Yeah.
Haribo. So the question is that how important repetition is, and that we need to hear it constantly and as much as possible, that we're not this body. I think I'm going to give up on this thing. Anyway, it's working. Okay. So the long story short here is we sometimes fall in the trap of offensive mentality of identifying somebody with the body or the mind, and how to remedy quickly, how do we withdraw quickly? Is it just finding someone to reveal your mind to that can preach to you and beat you on the head shastrically, or how do we remedy that problem?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Kunti is saying that because of false identification with the body, we tend to quarrel with others, even other devotees. And although we hear that we're not the body, and that we're the soul within the body, and the soul within every body is the same, and is eternal servant of Krishna, but because of the polluted atmosphere, we're always exposed to false propaganda that you are the body, you are the mind, and so we tend to get into quarrel, and especially with other devotees, it's a trap that we want to avoid falling into, but we might end up falling into. So I believe the question is that if we happen to fall into that trap and get into a quarrel with another devotee, how do we get out of it before it gets worse? Nityananda Prabhu, I think you are the fit person to answer this question.
My experience has been that if we always remain humble and understand that my personal condition is not very good, that I actually have to stay with the fundamentals of the process, which is chanting nicely, associating with devotees who are not on that platform, who I see that they're not on that platform. And particularly in my case, I have found that if I read scrutinizingly Srila Prabhupada's books and then reach out to others and serve others so that they can become more advanced in their Krishna consciousness, raise their consciousness in the first instance. As Srila Prabhupada says, you have to be conscious before you're Krishna conscious. And so the idea is to make an attempt to raise one's Krishna consciousness at all times, and be Krishna conscious by actually sharing one's Krishna consciousness with others. It keeps one very much in the mood of always remembering Krishna, never forgetting Krishna, always being with Guru and Krishna like that. So this actually allows us not to fall in the trap, because our consciousness is in the right position at all times. And the only time we get into a difficulty is when our consciousness slips back because of our past conditioning. And this past conditioning, as Srila Prabhupada says, is from time immemorial. So it is very strong. It's extremely strong. And as they say in this world, that recognition of the problem is 50% of the solution. That we recognize that I have this tendency to always be in material consciousness, to be in material consciousness, not always, but to be in material consciousness, then I have to guard against it. And preaching really helps like that. I mean, reaching out to others, teaching and preaching really helps, because we are questioned, questions are asked, people don't accept. We find that there are so many people who are very stubborn in their lives, in what they're doing. They don't feel they need a spiritual master. They don't feel that they need the presence of Krishna in their life. They're doing well. Things are working out. And so, staying with the fundamentals, particularly, most importantly, in the association of devotees, as Srila Prabhupada said, 90% of our success will come from the association of devotees, and 90% of the success will come from our chanting, constantly chanting the holy names of the Lord, humble state of mind. As the verse says, Trinadapi Shanichena, Dorapi Seishnana. Like that, I find that that's, in my case, I find that that really helps me. And then when I forget, because I think that I'm the person who's doing something, and I have this lording mentality come back, that's when I find that I have my problems. And so, avoiding that mentality is very, very important.
Yes. I think in one case, some disciples asked Srila Prabhupada about this problem. And he said that if we always think that we're the servants of the servants of the servants, then we won't have those problems. So, yeah. I think that's good what Nityananda Prabhu said. Like, in one rendition of your question, you mentioned, like, how do you get out of it before it gets worse? And then you mentioned, like, getting hit over the head with Shastra to bring you to your senses. So what Nityananda Prabhu said is also very relevant and appropriate, that if we are, you know, constantly, regularly reading Srila Prabhupada's books, then, you know, we'll be, you know, our mind will be tamed or controlled or at least influenced by the right philosophy. And so even before we get into a fight or before the fight becomes too aggressive, that good sense will come to us and we can stop ourselves. One passage in Chaitanya Charitamrita that comes to mind, which I feel is, you know, sometimes relevant to devotees, comes when Raghunath Das Goswami, the background was, there was a Mohammedan Chaudhary who used to collect the taxes in a certain area. And then that assignment was given to Raghunath Das's uncle and father. But, you know, unfortunately, they were keeping more than they were supposed to keep and giving less to the government. So the Mohammedan Chaudhary, who had lost that job, became aware of this, and so he came to arrest Raghunath's father and uncle, but they were not there. So he arrested Raghunath instead. And Raghunath, you know, he's very intelligent, and he said, you know, you and my father and uncle are just like brothers, and sometimes brothers quarrel like enemies, and then after some time they're friends again, and no one can predict when this will happen. He spoke in such a sweet way. It's described like tears were flowing down the Muslim's beard, and so he's saying, "Yeah, now you're quarreling with my uncle and father, but at any moment that situation could change, and you'll be friends again." So I think, you know, we should keep that in mind. I mean, there may be some temporary disagreement, but we are brothers and sisters. So, you know, the next moment we'll be friends again. So since we're going to be friends again anyway, why not be friends right now? And skip the other part. Any other questions or comments? Yes? Wait.
That once, as Nityananda Prabhu said, that by just knowing that you have this problem with you, it's half the, you have already reached halfway to the solution. So the other halfway, is it possible or is it right to do? If you so you recognize that this is the problem, and after the facts now, something has already happened, and then you ask for forgiveness to that soul and also ask for forgiveness to the Krishna within that soul whenever you get a chance, or whenever you are in that good state of mind.
So, I mean, what you said is nice, that after an event, you come to your senses and you ask to be forgiven by that devotee and by Krishna. So what was the question?
Is it right to do it? I know that it doesn't allow you to keep doing it again, but what if, I mean, those things are happening again and again? Can you still keep asking for forgiveness after the fact?
Well, something like, you know, I can forgive you once, I can forgive you twice, I can forgive you three times. But then after that, how many times? I mean, Prabhupada said that, so, I mean, yeah, after the first time, you shouldn't repeat it. But if due to, you know, bad conditioning, you do it a second time, well, you still have to ask for forgiveness. But there are other approaches besides just asking for forgiveness. And one is that suppose you speak badly about someone. So the Shastra recommends that same tongue which you use to criticize the devotee, with that same tongue you should glorify the devotee. So it's really a question of replacing the bad behavior with better behavior. Because if it's just sort of, okay, you did something bad, then you try to come to a neutral position. But then you may again lapse into the bad behavior. But if in between you try to engage in positive activities that are the opposite of the bad activities, then two things. One is that your heart will become purified, and you, and that contamination that led to the bad behavior will get purified. And you'll also develop better habits, so you won't lapse into those. Does that answer your question? There's a subcategory, and I'm not saying this at all because the question came from Hemangi, but there's a subcategory of dealings between husbands and wives, or it could be parents and children. And, you know, because of the... It doesn't have to be there, but there, it's very possible that there could be like a material aspect to the relationship, that our awareness of the person as a soul becomes covered, and we know it's, you know, my wife, my husband, or my child. And then, you know, we can lapse into that type of behavior within the family, which is also not good, because we're dealing with devotees and, you know, spirit souls, but on top of it with devotees. So yeah, we should try to keep our relationships in the family pure as well. I mean, assuming that everyone in the family is at least in the mood to become Krishna conscious, which isn't always the case. But if they are, then there's good hope.
Previously, Srila Gurudev, he used to whenever he would come for the first time, he'd ask everybody to say something nice about another devotee. And so it was such a nice, he kind of instituted that. And then, you know, just in thinking about it, I remember, like, you know, the devotees would always glorify one another in the morning. Each morning there would be like a, you know, you'd read off the scores, Sankirtan scores. There was just like more kind of, it's just part of being here that, you know, everybody would be recognized for what they were doing. There would be a lot of glorification. There would even be festivals, like at the end of the year. You know, how these pujaris did so nice this year. The book distributors did so good. You know, it was like an instituted program of glorifying the devotees.
That's good. Yeah.
You know, it's part of coming to the temple.
Yeah. Yeah, His Holiness Ratatra Goswami mentioned something similar. I've heard of it in different places. I heard they do it in Hong Kong. But there'll be like a, I guess a bag with the names of all the devotees. And then you pick a name out of the bag, and then you glorify that devotee. And everyone gets to glorify someone else. So, yeah, that's very, very good practice.
And it's so relishable. You feel so happy doing that. And then, you know, your tendency is to want to just think and glorify and be more, you know, positive and appreciative. It seems to really overcome the... you know, that fault-finding bodily, you know, concept, you know, you're useless and I hate you mentality.
That might be the one on your house.
That's just real quick. In 1981, we were all out on Sankirtan in the Houston temple. And back then it was they called it the shoebox because it was just like five-story building with, you know, all the brahmacharis were packed in there and the matajis would come visit. You know, the brahmacharinis would come for the program and then we would all have prasadam up on the second floor. But at one point when Srila Gurudev was first in China, the fighting was so bad in the temple. I mean, everybody was fighting with everybody. It was so bad. Then Srila Gurudev came, we had a 3-hour class where he had everybody in the room glorify and say something good about every single person in the room. And that, it totally put the fire out. But the fire was so bad. I mean, it was awful. And Gurudev, he used that. Thank you.
Nice. All right. Well, on that high note, did you want to add something?
Yeah, Maharaj, coming back to that family situation, we see that in the third canto, the Devahuti, who is such a very advanced soul, and the daughter of Manu, very well trained, very well brought up, also fell in the trap that she didn't see her husband in spiritual light, and enjoyed life for a long time until she came to this understanding that actually the greatest strength of my husband is his spiritual strength, and then she sort of surrendered to him. And I think this is very important for families. In families, that husband and wives understand this, that we have to surrender to the spiritual, the spiritual strength of the husband or the wife, whichever way it is. Generally, the husband is supposed to be the person who has a lot of spiritual strength, and the wife serves him in such a way that he will develop that spiritual strength and be a leader. And what I see that in this movement, what is happening a lot of times is there is no longer that taking risk by each person. They're not reaching out to try and, like at the time when Srila Prabhupada was here, people were told this is the goal, and the goal was set very high. And everybody had to achieve a very high goal, and in the process of trying to achieve the high goal, they had to keep their consciousness very good, stay in very good consciousness, because otherwise they won't achieve that goal. They would feel that they won't get the mercy from the deities and the devotees, and therefore I won't be able to distribute as many books, or I will not be able to reach out to so many people and serve them in their Krishna consciousness. And I think personally now, individually, we have to start doing that. Even if the movement doesn't do that in the same way, but individually I think we have to set ourselves some high lofty goals that mean that we are taking a risk. We know that we can easily fail in trying to achieve this goal, and so to avoid the failure, we'll always stay in good consciousness, because that means that, you know, that'll allow the mercy to come through so that we can achieve that goal. So pushing ourselves like that is something I think that's also very necessary now as devotees, that we push ourselves to do things that are very Krishna conscious, particularly reading books, reading Srila Prabhupada's books, setting a, like Keshav Bharati Maharaj made a vow that he will read 40 pages every day from the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's not an easy vow to actually fulfill on a daily basis. But taking vows, because it says in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, dril vrataha, that the vrata is actually very, very strong vrat. We take these vratas, strong vratas, that I will do this. Srila Prabhupada, once when asked about this question, he actually also answered that, in fact, earlier on, I made a vow that I will see Krishna face to face. I mean, that is a heavy vow to make, that I will see Krishna face to face. That just changes your consciousness from that point. You realize that everything that you do in every minute detail has to be perfect, because otherwise you're not going to see Krishna face to face. So I think this taking a vow is very important as well. We start taking personal vows that I will do this. Something that is a little more difficult than my current level. If I push myself like that, then we will avoid these pitfalls of criticizing others and seeing that there's a fault in others, when actually the fault lies in me and I need to correct my faults if I really want to advance in my Krishna consciousness. So I thought this vow taking is also very important, that we need to push that more and more.
All right, thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai.